Kennington, thanks for jumping on with us. We know the magnitude of this game, but, you know, there's some things we want to find out from you about this Alabama team. Now, Jalen Milroe, I think Dawg fans are familiar. We know he can be special. Tied his third in scoring in the SEC, fifth in rushing. And that's the thing I want to talk about. They're running the ball well, which is giving them an opportunity to do some other things, and they're not relying on Jalen Milroe to have to throw it around the yard. Talk about this transition with Kalen DeBoer in this offense and Jalen Milroe.
Yeah, I think that was one of the biggest questions of the offseason was how was Jalen Milroe going to fit in this Kalen DeBoer offense, which is drastically different than what they did at Washington. At Washington, they were throwing the ball the majority of the time. Michael Penix had a lot on his shoulders. I think he came into a situation at Alabama where he realized that he had much more talented runners than he had when he was at Washington. So what you're seeing is a diversified run game of running backs, Jalen Milroe getting a chance to run the ball, which for as good of an athlete as he was or he is, he didn't run the ball a lot last year. That was not a big part of Alabama's offense. It just felt like 3 yards that they were kind of leaving on the board, and they've really leaned into that. They're not afraid to run Jalen Milroe, so you're seeing Alabama run the ball at a much more effective clip than last year. And then off of that, that big playability throwing the ball down the field is still there. Jalen Milroe has the most touchdown passes in college football of more than 20 yards. Alabama has the most touchdowns in America of more than 20 yards. So this is the most explosive offense in the country right now. He's at the center of it. And that's going to be the challenge for Georgia is not only stopping Jalen Milroe, the runner, but stopping everything else that Bama does running the ball and then also defending the deep ball down the field as well.
You know, Ken, we were talking about this off the air. I mean, with Georgia's injuries, and it's still listed as game time for Jordan Hall and, more importantly, Mykel Williams, it just seems like they couldn't get Milroe. I mean, they couldn't stop him last year in the SEC championship. And now Justice Hayes and Jam Miller, these guys are just, I mean, killing it. Do you feel that Alabama's going to be able to win the line of scrimmage?
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it's trending. And they won the line of scrimmage battle last year when this group on Georgia was at full tilt. Now you have Alabama's offensive line, they're fully healthy for the first time this year. Their defensive line, I think, has taken a really big jump. And I think that's probably the most surprising thing about Alabama this year is how their defensive line and their front is able to affect the game without really blitzing or bringing any additional pressure. So you look at both sides of the line of scrimmage. That was an area that Alabama won last year. Georgia's really beat up on the defensive line. Tate Rattledge is not going to go on the offensive line. That's Georgia's best offensive lineman. So a disadvantage for Georgia, and that's something that they're going to have to figure out if they're going to keep pace in this game.
Kennington Smith joining us, talking about Alabama and Georgia tomorrow night, guys. He writes for The Athletic as we get what's going on with the Tide here. What about the preparation? Both teams had time off. The Dawgs have won their past 21 games, and they had more than a week to prepare. What did you think, and what are you hearing about the prep with the Crimson Tide having that same time off? We know if Nick Saban had that time off, it was going to be an issue.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's the same thing with Kalen DeBoer. This is somebody who's very meticulous, somebody who's known as being very processed, very detailed-oriented. I think it was good for Alabama from a health perspective. Kind of unlike Georgia, Alabama's bye week allowed for their team to get healthy, and this is going to be the first game all year where all scholarship players for Alabama are going to be available at one time. So you take that into consideration. I'm going to go back to the offensive line. The first three games of the year was a different offensive line combination in that front five. This is going to be the first game where they're going to start the same line back-to-back. So I think the bye week, most importantly for Alabama, was about that offensive line getting in sync. If you're looking at Alabama in the first 3 weeks, that's the biggest area that you look to for weakness is the offensive line and how they're going to be able to protect Jalen Milroe against the pass and cut down all penalties. So this bye week was really beneficial, I think, for that group to continue to gain chemistry. And I think for Georgia, on the other side of it, you have to look at that extra time in terms of how are they going to defend Jalen Milroe. Last year, it felt like a little bit more of a passive approach. They were spying multiple guys. They really weren't going after him. They wanted to keep him contained in the pocket. And statistically, they did a good job, but Milroe was still able to find a way to win the game, obviously. So what are they going to do in the round two of Jalen Milroe? Are they going to get after him a little bit more? Are they going to continue to kind of have this conservative approach? What is going to be the game plan? And as we've seen with Georgia and kind of these dynamic quarterbacks, when they have a second opportunity to face them, they tend to do pretty well. You think about how they kind of changed things up with Bryce Young a couple years ago, SEC championship to national championship. So that's going to be the chess match I'll be watching out for.
Talking about, man, I love his Twitter handle, Carl, from The Athletic. It is at Skinny Kenny underscore. Hey, man, speaking of, you might be skinny, and this kid is young. You won't be 18 until next February. This Ryan Williams story is just bananas. And you could take Georgia's top two wide receivers, actually almost three, and they don't add up to the numbers this kid's putting up as far as touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, this is a generational prospect, and I think this is an opportunity for the nation at large to get a chance to know who Ryan Williams is. But people in Alabama have known about him for a long time. This is somebody who was the first ever sophomore in the state of Alabama to win Mr. Football. You think about all the great players that have come through the state of Alabama. No one has done that. He did it, won it again as a junior, reclassified, and now he's at Alabama. And it's early in his career, obviously, but he feels like a Julio Jones to Nick Saban type of prospect, where he bought into Alabama at a time where there were people kind of jumping ship on Alabama. The shift of Saban to DeBoer, people leaving, people entering the transfer portal not knowing if they were going to commit to the program. Ryan Williams decided to stay committed to Alabama. Obviously, it's paying off right now, and I think that's going to be something that we look to down the line if Kalen DeBoer continues to sustain this excellence as a historic moment kind of in this new tenure. And you watch him on the field. He's 17 in age, but he doesn't look 17. I mean, nobody's been able to cover him yet. And it'll be really interesting to see how Georgia plays him, because I think this game is going to come down to explosive plays. And Alabama has that in Ryan Williams. It seems like they always kind of have that receiver. Who is going to be that guy from Georgia that's going to be able to kind of go band for band with him?
Alabama, by the way, Williams leads the team 285 yards, receiving four touchdowns. That's 28.5 yards per reception. That's eighth highest in FBS. He's special. Kennington, I want to ask you about the Heisman. If Jalen has a big game against Georgia, is he the front runner at that point for the Heisman Trophy?
Yeah, I would say so. I feel like if he's not, he should be at the forefront of the conversation right now. He has the most touchdowns in college football. He only has one turnover, and it came on a fumbled snap, so he hasn't thrown any interceptions. He is running the ball at a much higher clip. We're seeing him, his yards per carry is up, his rushing touchdowns, his rushing yardage. He's still throwing the ball down the field. And this is going to be, kind of like the first opportunity for guys to kind of have these Heisman moments. Like, we've seen, obviously, Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders at Colorado, but this is like the first game of the year where it's like two heavyweights kind of going at it. There's going to be a lot of attention on this game. So this does feel like a moment for Jalen Milroe to kind of put himself at the forefront of the Heisman conversation. And I think even taking it another step forward, this is an opportunity for him to validate himself on an NFL level. Mm-hmm. There are questions about his accuracy or his intermediate passing game or his processing or this and that. You go up against Georgia for a second time, you have another good game, you win against them a second time, all of a sudden, some of those questions about his aptitude as a quarterback at the next level start to quiet down some.
I mean, the explosive play is what, makes him so special, and Georgia, basically stops those explosive plays. This is kind of an abstract question, Kenny, but run with it. Who's got more pressure on him? Because, we know that Kirby has not beat, Alabama very much, 1-5 against Saban. But I could imagine some Alabama fans would lose their minds if the first time DeBoer goes up against Kirby, he loses. So who's got more pressure?
Yeah, I would say Georgia has more pressure, and I think it's from a couple different angles. Like, you're mentioning the Alabama aspect of it, and it's kind of been a question going back to last year of who is the standard bearer in the sport. And there were people that thought that Georgia had kind of taken that mantle after winning two championships in a row. And then Alabama kind of reasserts their dominance in the SEC championship. But Nick Saban retiring has kind of shifted how we think about these teams. Georgia has moved into the forefront. Alabama has seemingly taken a step back without Nick Saban. So there's pressure on Georgia to win the game from that aspect. But you look at it from a college football playoff SEC championship perspective, Georgia drops this one to Alabama. Do you have more or less confidence that they're going to go into Austin and win?
No.
Do you have more or less confidence that they're going to beat Tennessee? Do you have more or less confidence that they're going to beat Ole Miss? Because those three teams that I named look the same, if not better, than their preseason expectations. Like, those teams are exactly who we thought they were going to be, or maybe even a little bit better. So you look at Georgia's schedule moving forward, and you start to say to yourself, okay, there are some games on here that we penciled in as wins that we might have to think about in a different light depending on how they play against Bama. So obviously there's pressure on Alabama to win. I think it's more internal, though. I think the fans don't expect much of a drop-off, and they expect them to win. I think externally, nationally, if Alabama were to lose, I don't think it would be some sweeping indictment on Kalen DeBoer. So there's pressure on both sides, but I think from a micro level and a macro level, there's definitely more pressure on Georgia.
All right, Kennington, before we let you go, and he does a great job of covering the Bama and football, and check him out with the Athletic guys. How much is Saban around? does he have an earpiece? Like, what are we talking about when we say he's got an office, he's aware of what's going on? Like, do you see him? What's the deal with Saban as far as his connection to the program? Or is this like a red phone somewhere and he has access?
Yeah, it's kind of like the latter. He is more of a sounding board. He's somebody that the coaches can rely on for a resource. I think Kane Womack, the defensive coordinator, has kind of tapped on him the most. They talk about defense a lot. They talk about football a lot. And obviously, he's a resource as somebody who recruited this roster. So just kind of tapping on his shoulder to answer certain questions. And he is in the facility some, mainly to kind of get treatment from Jeff Allen and stuff like that. But he's not really in the forefront a lot, and he's not around too much. Obviously, he's traveling with College Game Day. He has his foundation. He's playing golf a lot. So he's not around, you know, every single second day to day, but he's somebody that has a presence in the building, certainly. And it's been a pretty seamless transition. I think it's hard for somebody of his status that's had that much control and that much power and that much acclaim to just seemingly step away and let somebody else run the show. But he seemed to have done that, and he obviously has a place to where he can kind of be a part of the program, and his voice can be heard whenever they allow him to do so or want him to do so. So it's been a pretty smooth transition, and it doesn't happen like this everywhere. You know, as we all know, we've seen in college, there are other places where transitions aren't as smooth as this. So he still has a presence, but it's not like, you know, he's in the box or he's kind of having this overarching voice overriding certain decisions. He's more so just being used as a resource.
Okay. It's a great answer because everybody's wondering, and you're there, and you're talking to these guys. I think everybody feels like, you know, he's got this secret line. Hey, man, we appreciate you stopping by. Looking forward to a great game. The key, you say, is explosive plays. That's that because Bama's leading the country in that area.
Yeah, Bama's leading the country in explosive plays. Georgia has only allowed two plays of 20 yards or more on defense this year, haven't allowed a touchdown. So it's kind of like unstoppable force meets a movable object.